Hey, everybody. Welcome to this week's episode of The Big Ticket, Variety and iHeart's movie podcast. I'm your host, Mark Malkin. Today, I have a very special guest, Renee Zellweger. I actually first met Renee 23 years ago at the premiere of Jerry Maguire. It was on a cruise ship in New York Harbor. We still, to this day, have no idea why Jerry Maguire had its premiere on a cruise ship. But today, we are here to talk about Judy. As we know, Renee already has one Oscar, but she could be picking up another for her portrayal of Judy Garland in the last months of her life. I talked to Renee just after the film's world premiere earlier this month at the Telluride Film Festival. Now, I have to tell you, the sound may be a little wonky because we chatted backstage at one of the theaters, but listen in. Renee talks about transforming into Judy, how she relates to the Wizard of Oz star, and what it was like singing with Sam Smith for the Judy soundtrack. I have that and a whole lot more coming up after the break. Welcome back to The Big Ticket. I'm your host, Mark Malkin. Now, here's Judy star Renee Zellweger.
Okay, your performance, Renee. It is, there are points where there are close-ups on your face. And I don't like the word uncanny because that sounds so cliche, but it's, there's Judy. I mean, I'm a gay boy, so I know my Judy. And you do this thing with your mouth that you're like, oh my God. You've got her expressions down, but it's not cartoon. It's not like, you know, it's not like someone who's in Judy drag. It's really phenomenal. What was it like seeing yourself for the first time as Judy? How did that process work?
It was, I talk about the experience as a series of experiments.
Right.
And we were just seeing what if.
Right.
We all had this common goal, and now we just want to see, well, what if?
Right.
We knew what we wanted to do and what we wanted to achieve in making this film
mm-hmm.
and telling the story. And now, okay, let's try that. And Rupert, you know, we threw it all on, and then he started to extract, and he wanted to minimize it because he felt like he didn't want to be worrying about what you might see that would distract you.
Mm-hmm.
He wanted you to be lost in the story and go with it, and that's
right.
It. Not question it by kind of dissecting bits at a time,
mm-hmm.
you know? And I'm glad that he did. So, went over to England, and we just kind of threw on a wig and did some makeup first of all, and we thought, wow, we could probably do this. The hardest part was trying to figure out, like, I don't know, just what the balance was, I suppose.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, so we did quite a few makeup tests for over a few months.
Wow.
Yeah, with different photo shoots and different lights, and then we did it on, you know, film. And then, so it was quite a process. But I'm really glad that he wanted to minimize it.
Mm.
I was happy to have the cheeks and the thing and the everything.
Right.
You know, to have it hang here. I was happy to have all of that.
Right.
And after a while, when I learned what prosthetics do halfway
yeah.
through the day.
Because you had the teeth, right?
Mm. Mm-hmm.
There's the tooth,
mm-hmm.
but it's the Judy tooth.
Mm.
It's just...
Well, see, and these things were really interesting, really tricky, because from picture to picture, it was different, and I couldn't get it. I kept trying to see what's what, and then
right.
I read that she actually wore clip-on veneers for her performances.
Clip-on.
Yeah, since she was a kid. And sometimes she wouldn't later on, sometimes she would, sometimes
right.
she wouldn't. So that I thought, oh gosh, because there was no consistency, and that made sense to me.
How much did you study her before filming began?
Well, I guess we started talking about it in 2017.
Mm-hmm.
And right away.
And did you just watch footage and just mm-hmm. over and over again?
Yeah, footage, YouTube.
Mm.
There are some fan sites where they share
everything.
Just such interesting things and anecdotes that you wouldn't find.
What was the most fascinating thing you learned? Even if it's just a story.
That's hard. That's a hard one because
mm-hmm.
there's so much material.
Right.
The most fascinating thing that I learned. Gosh, I have to simmer on that one. I think I was surprised. I mean, first of all, the obvious. I was very surprised and found it shocking that someone who had worked since she was 2 years old on that level could find herself in financial dire straits at that stage in her career.
Yeah.
That shocked me.
And by the way, only 47.
I know. Yeah, I know.
Because you look at photos of her when she was 47, she looked like she was almost 90.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the consequence of some decisions that were made for her very early in life. And that surprised me too. It surprised me how naive people were about the consequences of medication in a child's body and what that can do to chemistry.
Was it naive or was it just we didn't know?
Naive in that we didn't know. Or ignorant, is a better word. Ignorant's a better word.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because I don't think it was sort of nefarious as we're going to do this and we don't care because it, you know, it's a means to suit our ends.
Right. It was interesting last night when you said during the tribute that you don't think she would have found herself as a victim.
No.
That she thought these were just professionals that she had to do for her career.
I guess so, yeah. I mean, it doesn't negate that there was longing and anger.
Right.
Because you hear it in the vocal recordings and in her interviews, and she kind of masks it with humor and chat shows when she talks about the just the audacity of it, of what was imposed on her. But I don't think she ever saw herself as a victim. She was a powerful person, a powerful woman.
In what way? What do you mean?
She had great, and this is my interpretation of what I've read. And again, that doesn't mean that she wasn't remarkably vulnerable.
Right. You could be powerful and vulnerable.
I agree. But she had, what is the word? She had, what is the word, high altitude?
Drink some more water.
Agency.
Right, yeah.
And she, while she didn't make decisions, you know, she didn't want to be involved in finances. She didn't want to deal with that. And she didn't want to deal with the bookings and the things and the logistics of complicated things.
Right,
about
the day-to-day.
Accounting and keeping books and all that stuff. She was very clear about what she would and wouldn't do and exercising what, I guess, autonomy she did have. And she spoke out and was very clear about her opinions about things. And
one thing that when I've been thinking about her and, you know, this, especially this time in her life, there are you do see a lot of alcohol, drug addicts, celebrities, for lack of a better term, the world doesn't seem to have much sympathy for them. Judy, it seems like there was always sympathy for. But do you think there's even, I don't know if it's sympathy, a stronger empathy and sympathy for her now looking through it through a lens of like Me Too and Time's Up?
Probably.
Yeah.
Probably. I hadn't thought about that, but I'm sure you're right. But with women in any profession, but at that, I guess the balance of power was so remarkably tipped in the direction away from her. I'm sure. Someone mentioned last night how rare it is that we have our beloved treasured American icons and that we know them from childhood into their adult lives.
Right.
Rupert made an interesting comment last night. He said, America is so young, too, that our icons and the people who shaped our cultural history are still very much with us.
Yes, very good point, yeah.
There's not 2,000 years to be talking about, you know, and forgetting about the people who shape a nation.
Mm.
I thought that was a really interesting point in terms of connecting us with our love for and affection for.
Because it's there. It's right there.
Yeah.
How do you find yourself similar to Judy Garland?
Oh.
Or do you?
Oh, goodness. I'm sure we all relate in some way, which is why she unites us.
Right.
We're all sort of connected in our affection for her, or because back in the day when we used to share cultural moments and they were kind of rare and spectacular, we would all watch The Wizard of Oz together once a year.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we talked about, that everybody. So we're all kind of connected, I think. and our affection for her in that way. And her music, when the albums come out, or when, you know, there's a, I don't know.
But as a woman, as an actress in Hollywood?
Yeah. Oh, well, I mean, there's the obvious. There's the obvious.
What's the obvious?
Oh, well, I mean, I understand schedule, and I understand choices you have to make, yeah. And I understand public scrutiny, and I understand having a public persona where, I don't know, some people might feel that they know you, and that's really lovely and a blessing in so many ways.
Right.
And then there's a lot of misunderstanding and misconception in the mix.
Mm.
And I understand that too. Projection and you know, false narrative.
Do you remember the first time someone came up to you on the street who felt like they knew you?
Do I remember that? No, I think I just remember it in phases.
Right.
You're that girl from that commercial. You're that girl from... You're in that movie.
Right.
And you're... And then it was, you're Renee... Blah, blah, blah. And then it was, oh, wow. Renee Zingwalker. And then we got a little closer.
Did anyone ever tell you to try to change your name? I feel like Hollywood would have done that.
I don't remember. My brother. He said, don't take the rest of us down with you.
Right now, we're going to take a short break. But when we come back, Renee reveals what it was like hitting the recording studio with Sam Smith. And now we're back with more of Renee Zellweger.
So, of course, we have to talk about the singing. And I know you talked about it last night, that it wasn't something that was really, you sat down and said, you're going to do the singing. It just sort of seemed very organic.
Well.
To an extent.
Well, you know, this is not, I did not consider myself a singer. And
have you seen Chicago?
Yeah, but again, I didn't consider myself a singer. Zita's a singer, you know? She's a singer, you know?
Right.
And I didn't think that, I don't know when I made this decision to define myself in this way, but I'm not a person who sings these belter songs.
Right.
In my mind, that's not part of how I identify.
Right.
But Rupert decided that we were going to not think that way anymore. And out of necessity, you know, I didn't believe that thing about the muscle and how you can build it and manipulate it. And there are things you mustn't do and things that you can do and that it takes time. And that, no, you can't sing that song today, but you might sing it in 6 months. And you might not sing it in 6 months, but you might sing it in a year. And you might hit that note once. Where in your lifetime, maybe in 10 years, you could hit it twice, three times, five times. Maybe then you could just sing it.
Right.
I didn't believe that. I've changed my mind. I understand the process of it now. And it's an interesting kind of work to stretch your vocal cords and build them up. And it was a really, really interesting exercise emotionally, too.
Why is that?
Because you have to find your voice.
Literally.
Yes. And I hadn't realized that I'd sort of maybe shut that down. Interesting, isn't it?
What do you mean by shutting it down?
Well, it's tiny for a reason.
Yeah.
Because you're not using it.
Right.
It's an interesting spiritual connection that I hadn't considered before.
Wow.
But so there's that process. And then there's the learning the songs and most, a lot of the
You words. Probably knew all of the words from at least a couple of the songs.
Oh, sure. But, you know, hitting the notes, no, I wouldn't dare. You know, that's the part where you kind of fade out of the singing along in the car.
So tell me about filming the movie, singing the song.
Right.
What was the note that you hit that you're like, oh shit, I hit it?
Yeah, it's just in a different part of your voice.
Mm-hmm.
I thought, oh wow, your singing is here. No, it's not. It's way down here.
Right.
I mean, any of them at the ends of the belting songs, you know,
right.
Those are something. And it's in a slightly lower register than I sing in
right.
naturally or speak in naturally. So that was interesting too, to manipulate, to try to be comfortable in a place where you shouldn't be.
Right.
And there was a lot of contorting my body at first. I had to bend over in order to make this
sound.
Well,
but also, but talking about contorting your body, there's mm-hmm. one shot where the camera is over you and your back is arched. Mm-hmm. And it was Judy. Like, that's what happened to her. Her body was completely contorted.
Mm-hmm.
Is that painful?
I saw the chiropractor a few times in London. Sure,
wow.
sure. Yeah. It was great, though. Janie, to me, when I was fitting the dresses and would stand in the posture
right.
in the dresses. So she fit the dresses to that posture. So they wouldn't zip up if I didn't. Isn't that great? How helpful
wow.
is that? Yeah. It's funny.
And I know you've talked about that. You did try to reach out to her family.
Yeah.
And they didn't respond.
Oh, no, it wasn't like that
oh, okay.
at all. Oh, no. I think that. I can't speak for David Livingstone. I'll let
okay.
you talk to him. But we have a mutual friend in
mm-hmm.
common who had introduced us in Vegas some years back when she did her final live stage tour.
Yeah.
And my friend was the producer of the filming of it.
Okay.
What a night. I mean, she started at midnight, whatever it was, and she'd go in for hours and hours and hours. And she was, I was in tears. I mean,
right.
what a thing to experience and to see, and she's was a force.
What did you want to ask her?
I wanted to more than ask her. I wanted to express what my intentions were and
mm.
why I was drawn to this telling of this story that's been
mm.
told, it seems, in different ways, and
right.
By Lorna, especially in her novel. I mean, her novel, I'm sorry, her biography,
yeah.
and her autobiography, and then again in the miniseries that was made from it. Again, my friend who had produced the Vegas show produced Me and My Shadows. And I wanted to express that and to assure her that that it was coming from a place of love, and that it was... I wanted to ask her what she would hope from it, but not to, and also to express why I wasn't going to ask her to share things with me,
right.
because it didn't feel to me, it felt that, it felt like, an unforgivable, solicitation, an imposition, and I wouldn't dream of it, because I thought, well, what she hasn't shared at this point, that belongs to her, and it should remain her treasure, not for
I know it's hypothetical, but if she came to you and said, don't do the movie, is that something you thought about?
I thought that if she read it, and knowing why we wanted to make this film, it didn't occur to me that she would ask us not to.
That makes sense.
You know, it just felt like it was an opportunity to contextualize things in a way that brought understanding about those circumstances. So you can't lampoon her, and you can't write her off. And any of the garbage that was written that sort of dismissed her as no good anymore, a washed up drunk, a drug addict, would be in some way, those voices would be diminished by shining a light on how these circumstances came to be.
I mean, just watch that telephone booth scene. I think that said it all.
She was a great mom.
Yeah. Okay. On a lighter note, right. Recording with Sam Smith.
I know.
What the fuck?
That's what I said. I know.
What was that experience
like? Isn't that ridiculous?
Like?
It's ridiculous. And it took him like 2 minutes. He's never sung in this style before. And it was his grand's favorite Judy song. And I didn't know this, but he had done his paper, his final on Judy at school. I mean, it's ridiculous. He's so gifted. And what a special, sweet, fun person. Have you met him?
Yes.
Yeah. Isn't he
very sweet?
Wonderful.
Very sweet.
He just sparkles, and he just came in, and he's like, "Here we go." He thought,
"Were you nervous?"
I was giddy.
Yeah,
I was too giddy to be nervous. I was giddy. Seriously, 2 seconds for the man.
So when are you going to release your own album?
Oh well.
Come on. You're a singer.
Oh, wow.
I know you don't like to say it, but you are.
I'm a faker.
Okay.
That was Renee Zellweger. Judy is in theaters September 27th. Thanks for listening to this week's episode of The Big Ticket. Remember, a new episode drops every Thursday. I'm your host, Mark Malkin. And don't forget to follow me on Twitter and Instagram @MarkMalkin. See you next week.